The next reading can be found on page 3 of the Gospel of John, which you found on your seats, and perhaps I can encourage you to turn to that so you can follow along. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth.
Well, please sit down. And may I add my very, very warm welcome indeed to you, especially if you're here for the first time visiting us or an occasional visitor, a very warm welcome to St. Helens. I hope you have a tremendous Christmas and we look forward to seeing you again in the new year. 10 days ago, roughly 10, maybe 12 days ago, I was on a train up to Sheffield and the man opposite me was reading a copy of the Sun newspaper. Now, The Sun is not the publication I am in the habit of subscribing to. However, I couldn't help noticing this most striking headline on its front page. Dad bit off man's finger at nativity. Now, I don't know with what intention you have joined us this lunchtime for our carols at St. Helens. To any who are in any sense apprehensive, may I assure you that our first aid department is first class and that to date all our Christmas celebrations have proceeded without incident. However, when he got off the train, skirting over the page that I know my wife would not approve of me looking at, I turned to follow up on the story and came to the centre pages, which read like this: "Is your grotto great or grotty?" And if it was great, it was ranked a cracker, and if it was grotty, then it was awarded a turkey. And as I proceeded on my way to Sheffield, I couldn't help asking myself, well, what really is Christmas all about? And I determined to look at verse 14 of chapter 1 of this most famous of Christmas readings, which if you turn to it, you'll find on page 3. And as I read it out, I think you'll agree with me that it takes us right to the heart of the true meaning of Christmas. Sentence number 14, page 3. Perhaps you'd like to look down at it. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Two very simple points then, and then some concluding remarks. First, we are dealing here with history. That is, we are dealing with trustworthy, first-hand eyewitness reportage. It is substantiated by multiple independent, rational witnesses. It stands the test of close scrutiny, and it is, as the historians would say, both falsifiable and reliable. And that point, you can see, if you look down again, is made for us in our sentence halfway through. We have seen his glory. So these eyewitnesses who recorded this truth for us saw Jesus, touched Jesus, listened to Jesus, learned from Jesus, knew Jesus personally. Jesus was a real figure in real-time history, and the events of his life and the substance of his teaching are faithfully recorded for us. There is, if you like, a fact on the table. Now, we could spend at least three one-hour lectures exploring this. I would be delighted to do so. I notice one or two of you looking marginally nervous. This is not my intention right now. It is an almost inexhaustible subject, and I'd very happily speak to you at great length on it. There's more than enough material. But just in sort of passing, the eyewitnesses are named. Concurrent events are accurately recorded. Place names and people's names are given. Current political and religious leaders, concurrent political and religious events. Caesar Augustus is emperor, Quirinius is governor, Herod is king over the province of Judea. And then sort of smaller geographical details, such as prevailing winds, which haven't changed over the centuries, and architectural details, and tree species that can only be found in particular little niche areas of the Middle East are recorded, so that all of these are accurately portrayed, even as the events of Jesus' life are interwoven into what we know to be the factual fabric of the first century. So then, of course, the gospel accounts are much more than mere history, but they are historical, written either by eyewitnesses or, in the case of Luke's gospel, an investigative historian who has carefully interviewed the eyewitnesses. We need not be shy about them or embarrassed by them or uncertain or lacking in confidence about them. Indeed, I hope you might take a gospel away with you. Please do. And even better, ask somebody you know in the office to read it with you and to explore the accounts and the eyewitness material. Many, many have done that over the years from St. Helens here. I've read John's gospel with numerous men over the years, and I'm always struck by the response of my legally trained friends. One individual brought up in an atheistic home, now in his mid-20s, a barrister, paused at one point in our study. His name was Alan. This bears all the marks of authentic eyewitness testimony. You will find that it does. Just one or two very simple observations. First, this means the facts of Christmas are not on a par with Harry Potter, Santa and his elves, Frodo and Sam, Shrek, or Spider-Man. I know it's patronizing to say that, but we do need to remind ourselves of it. Secondly, this means that the materials in the gospel is unlike any other religious material you will find in the world. I remember having breakfast with the ancient historian Dr. Paul Barnett, professor at Macquarie University. I was about to speak on Luke's gospel here on a Tuesday, I think carol service time, and he turned to me and he said, "You do realize, don't you, William, this makes this material unique. Whatever you think of what it says, there is no other religious material like it." And third, in order to discount these Gospels as history, we would have to take some pretty big steps. We could try and persuade one another that all four Gospels were written independently, weaving in the fictional life of Jesus with the events of history. But then you would have to believe that the four Gospel writers invented a form of literature, the historical fictional novel, that didn't appear again in human history for a further 1,500 years. And I would like to suggest that that is a pretty big leap of faith on your part, which I am not prepared to subscribe to. History. Secondly, divinity. I want us to analyse now that intriguing title given to Jesus in the first three words of our sentence. So if you would glance down again at sentence number 14, I take it we're all involved in the business of analysis. I hope you are, given that you carry some of my future finances, some of you, involved in the business of analysis. And I'd like us now to analyse the first three words of verse 14. And the Word. Now that title, the Word, is introduced for us in the first three sentences of the most famous of readings there at the top of the page. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Now, do you notice what our writer has done? Sentence 14 connects the massive claims of the first three sentences with the historical figure, Jesus of Nazareth. The Word became flesh, and literally it reads, pitched his tent amongst us. Notice the third person singular. He, his dwelling, his glory, he was with God. So that we are dealing with the person of history, Jesus. He is the Word. And the Word who was with God in the beginning, who was God, who made all things, without whom was not anything made that has been made. This Word of eternity entered into human history. Pitched his tent amongst us, was witnessed and touched and heard and known. No wonder then they marvelled at the wisdom of Jesus, trembled at the power of Jesus, were humbled by the purity of Jesus, and worshipped at the feet of Jesus. Now, once again, we could spend many hours on this. Books and books and books have been written on it. But again, you will not find this claim of God himself descending into the world anywhere else in any other religion or philosophical system available to man. It's unique. And it explains why Jesus behaved as Jesus did behave when he grew up in his public ministry. How could he turn water into wine? How did he heal those on the point of death? How could he feed 5,000? How did he walk on water and calm the raging sea? Where did his power over evil come? How come he was raised from the dead? Why did angels sing their chorus of praise? The Word became flesh. Why were the shepherds filled with joy? Because he came and dwelt amongst us. Who brought the wise men from the east? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling amongst us. We have seen his glory. Why did Mary ponder and wonder and worship, full of grace and truth? You know, one or two of my more fundamentalist, secular friends sometimes suggest that it is unreasonable to believe that Jesus was God because as scientists, they will not allow that supernatural things could happen. Their reasoning is essentially along these lines. I will not allow this evidence because it does not fit my conclusions. That is not entirely rational, logical thinking. I will not allow Jesus to be God or to have done anything supernatural because I do not believe supernatural things happen. That's just bad science. No, the eyewitness evidence of history would have it that Jesus behaved as you would expect God to behave because Jesus, the man of history, is the God of eternity. This single, simple fact blows a glorious blast of refreshing, cool air across the sentimental slush of Christmas. Now, please don't get me wrong, I love all the trimmings that surround Christmas, and I have the reputation, our family, of being the most excited on the 24th of December. Indeed, one year, one child heard Santa's sleigh on the roof of our house. And let me tell you, it could equally have been me. I get tremendously excited about Christmas. In fact, I've done my shopping, Christmas shopping, finished 10 days ago. Thank you very much. I was up in Oxford Street. The Salvation Army band was playing. I even like Slade's Merry Christmas, Everybody, and Bing Crosby does it for me. When I was in Piccadilly, I popped into Fortnum's and picked up what I think is the present of the year as a little extra for my father. And if you are still searching around for this sort of thing, for the man who has everything, edible scorpion pickled in vodka. And I felt this would just give him a little bit of a pick-up after lunch in his 87th year. So there's not a hint of Victor Meldrew in my body, and I love Christmas. But when it comes to the true meaning of Christmas, this captures it perfectly. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We have seen His glory. How we've just sung about it. He came down from earth to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all. Christ, by highest heaven adored. Christ, the everlasting Lord. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. Hail the incarnate deity. It's lovely to hear of our friend's first Christmas on the video, wasn't it? I remember my first Christmas. We were farming at the time. Animals to feed up at 6, 5:30, something like that, out into the starlit sky. For the first time, able to say as a 19-year-old now, as a Christian, God came down to earth so that I can know Him personally, with confidence. We must close. A couple of concluding remarks. They will be slightly longer than usual conclusions, but brief. First, may I wish you a very happy Christmas indeed. I hope you have a tremendous Christmas, and I hope you have a very good New Year as well, full of joy and happiness. But let me say, do we not need this? As the once Christian fabric of our Western European culture unravels under our secularist masters, do we not need to reconnect with the Word made flesh, full of grace and truth? Let's be clear, this is not moralism. This isn't the Prime Minister on Saturday morning saying we all need a bit of Christian behaviour. This is grace. And grace is the most wonderful five-letter word in the whole of the English language. It means being given things that we don't deserve. We have seen His glory full of grace, God entering into the world to give you and me something we simply do not deserve. A relationship with our Creator. Do we not need that? He made us. He knows you through and through. He loves you. Full of grace. And He entered into the squalor of this world with all that's so wonderful and yet so wretched about it, so that you might know Him, rather than face a cold and dry secularist future full of grace. Do you not need it? And full of truth. This is not moralism, it's grace. This is not relativism, it is truth. True truth, absolute truth, truth that is unchanging. Truth that trumps all other claims to truth, because God has entered into the world and has declared Himself so that there is no longer any need for uncertainty or speculation, God has made himself known. There is no longer any excuse for that most wretched of conditions, agnosticism. God has declared himself. You don't need to be ignorant anymore. The Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. Do we not need that grace and truth from our Creator? Well, do please take away this gospel. Please read it. You could finish it before we resume here on January the 10th, on Tuesday the 10th of January. On Tuesday the 10th of January, I am going to be speaking by way of follow-up to this service on verse 12 of chapter 1. Just one verse, a very simple, plain analysis of what it means to be a child of God and to have this relationship. But note this. If God has entered the world and made himself known, full of grace and truth, then that truth shines a spotlight on me. And if I determine that I will have nothing to do with the Word made flesh, that I don't want to know him, I want to hold him at arm's length, then the truth is out about me as well. I don't want God in my life. I want a cold, dispassionate, secularist future. I don't want the grace of God. I want to plough my own course through life with nothing to do with my Creator. And that is a grim truth indeed. Well, we're going to close by singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Let's stand.